The Ocelli Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck Ocelli.
Eighth day of December, if I know what day it is or where it is, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar, disorientation seems to be my meditation and my provocation for breathing at the moment. Anyway, it is Wednesday, middle of the week, and third broadcast day for the Ocelli Effect, this current schedule. But anyway, a lot of things going on at Ocelli.com. Donald Jeffrey Show just completed, and it was an abbreviated version due to my screw-up, but hopefully we'll get through both hours tonight and get you some information on my show that works. Anyway, of course, most of you will be catching this via the podcast later on, further on down the stream via your fondle slab of choice, your applicable application, your podcatcher does yours. So it is what it is. Welcome to Wednesday. I have a first-time guest here, which was booked by my Wednesday night producer. And frankly, as soon as I let a few people know that he was going to be on, they were a little surprised. But there are roads in which we cross each other, and it makes sense for us to walk in the same direction, even if you don't think that we would be fast friends. Let's get at somebody who's got some real information, regardless of how I might view everything they've ever said. And Jay Dyer is somebody who, quite frankly, has been around a while. I'm sure you guys know him even better than I do. As a listener, as somebody who was a consumer of, let's call it, less than the corporate media's normal spin out there, a guy who thinks for himself, right? And isn't that always a good thing, even if he doesn't think like you? So with an open mind, open heart, I want to get to some information here that is going to be, again, not your standard fare, and isn't that what this is all about? Because I'm not the star of the show. Indeed, the guests and, well, you, the listener, are, because it is you who is out there seeking other information. The alternative. I hate even using that word anymore, but enough out of me. In the second hour, we're going to hear from Australia from another brand new guest. And we were going to have Australian Ben on to give us a report, but instead, we're going to get a little surprise from a professional announcer who is actually well-known in other media circles outside of the independent. But, we'll get there when we get there. Jay Dyer, first of all, you know, I don't even want to give your introduction here because I don't want to trip it up, screw it up anyway. But this is the first time you've been on my network, my show at all. Maybe you never heard of me before, and that's fine. I wouldn't be surprised. But I've definitely heard of you. First of all, how are you doing tonight? And second, how is it that you would introduce yourself to people if indeed they maybe, and I doubt it, but maybe they never heard of you before?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here. Those are good questions. I guess I would say I'm kind of a mix of multiple things. We do a lot of different types of material. So I do essays. I do philosophy-related stuff. I do debates. I do movie analysis, film analysis. We do kind of somewhat satirical, comedic type material. I sometimes host the fourth hour of Alex Jones. I cover geopolitical stuff. So I might be known by maybe people from your crowd for doing what I call the Global Elite Book Series, where I kind of work through over the past 4 or 5 years, about 50 to, I think we're approaching 60 now, of the top writings of the elite of the last century. So I kind of read those books, summarize them, analyze them, give my take, and then I basically am a glorified nerd who does people's homework for them. So a lot of people don't have time to read all those books, and that's what I do. So I read, you know, the Brzezinskis, I read the Rockefellers, I read, you know, all these MKUltra documents and whatnot, and then kind of summarize for people. So that's what I do.
Excellent. Well, I like that. A glorified nerd who does other people's homework for them. That is beautiful because it doesn't speak to ego. It just says, look, I've done the work, which is fair enough. And you have your analytics on some of Hollywood stuff is legendary to me. Now, again, that might be what stands out to somebody like me, but there's a lot of different ways we could go. Again, I love it, though. The glorified nerd who does the homework for you.
Huh.
Well,
Well, you know, I wanted to be a professor, and I went to college to do that, and then I realized that that just wasn't really for me. There's a lot of kind of go along to get along stuff in academia, which I just wasn't down to do, and I wanted to do my own thing, be my own boss, and all that kind of stuff. So I figured, well, why don't I just kind of put the material out there and kind of do it at a discount price? So rather than people, you know, paying exorbitant amounts to go to college, I can just kind of be a YouTube professor, maybe in a way, and kind of give people lectures and insights into materials that people in academia do talk about, but most people in the public don't talk about, or they don't know about. They're kind of kept in the dark about. And so that's what I do, is kind of try to approach a lot of the topics from a quasi-academic perspective, but, you know, keep it interesting, not get boring.
Well, plus you have an anti-elitist attitude, which, you know, look, is not a political stripe. It is simply a philosophical one. Now, that leads people into certain political camps sometimes, but, you know, they used to say people were radical when they didn't want to, you know, fall in line with academia, but they wanted to analyze academic materials. And I kind of have come at this from the same direction, of course, from a little bit of a different starting point. But you know what? I don't want to talk about my starting point, and really your starting point, I'm almost going to skip over, because I want to get into something else you mentioned in your own introduction here, which is the philosophical angle. Mm-hmm. And I want to go directly to it. I don't want you to even address the current events necessarily, because, look, if you're listening to my show, you're trying to interpret what is being presented in many different camps, so to speak. Again, I use that word. Mm-hmm. In many different classrooms, pseudo classrooms out there, one way or another, whether they are pushing propaganda or literally trying to teach you something. Mm-hmm. And let's get to one of the strangest elements here. And by the way, just put a pin in this, Jay. If it's at all possible, when the new Matrix movie comes out, I may want to have a discussion with you.
Okay.
Just from what I understand that material may be and what it might actually mean, and putting it in context, since it's been a continuous trope in indie media for, I don't know, a decade and a half at least. Even though the movies have existed for like 20 years, I guess the first one came in 99. But either way, we know what we're talking about here. Put a pin in that. I may want to revisit this discussion with you about The Matrix at some point, but I haven't seen the full movie yet. Right. So, you know, I won't judge until I actually view something. But I have a feeling there's going to be some judgments need to be made. Anyway, let's leave that alone for now. I'm curious about this, and this may sound like a very strange question that I'm winding up, but try and bear with me and work with it, because I think this is important. Clearly, in studying the writings of the elites and having to go everywhere from, the beginnings of the manipulations of advertising and how propaganda has been written, especially if you start with the early 20th century stuff, right? You can go further back if you want, but truthfully, what you were talking about studying and putting together bit by bit and going over, you know, being the well-read anti-propagandist, basically, you would have had to have studied all these very interesting philosophies, ideas about manipulating people indirectly, directly with symbols. And, you know, that leads us into some esoteric areas. And that leads us into the occult directly. And by the occult, I do mean that which is hidden, although it is often hidden in plain sight. So here is my curiosity and why it is I don't even see this in the indie media so much, why it is not directly seen as a Book of Revelations proportional script being written here regarding things that are going on here on this place we call planet Earth at the moment. Seems to be a global agenda that somebody could easily line up with a whole lot of things that have been written about biblically. Now, I'm not asking for you to reveal your innermost thoughts about this, but I mean, honestly, am I crazy to think that, you know, the idea that maybe if you don't have a mark, you won't be able to buy or sell or trade and those things, which have been discussed regarding the Antichrist, and I do have a follow-up question about the Antichrist in general, And believe me, I'm not usually religiously oriented during this show, but when I have no choice, I have no choice. Do you see any sort of, well, predictive programming in here that is going on in a general sense that is esoteric, occult, and at the same time, you don't even need to be a believer to examine the literature and understand that that there is an agenda at play here that fits right into those narratives, whether the agenda was written after the narrative or it is designed coincidentally. I mean, I guess those are all open to opinion, but what are your thoughts on that, Jay Dyer? I think you're gonna tell us something a little different than we hear elsewhere.
Well, my view of the, for example, Book of Revelations is that there's an immediate historical context that the Apostle John was referring to, which in his day was, I believe, Nero. So I think the immediate context is Nero, but I think that the type of kind of control system and structure that Nero was trying to set up is kind of a foreshadowing and a type of the type of system that we're in now. So you could kind of say that all of these structures are beast systems in the sense that they try to enslave, they try to control, they try to be basically tyrannical systems. It doesn't matter which empire or system you pick, they're all kind of operate on the same modus operandi. So I would say that they're all beast systems. They're all kind of just patterns and recurring types within history. And but I don't know necessarily that we today are in the last times. It could be, but whether we are or we aren't, there's no doubt that it is a beast type of system. And that's what I think is the immediate context of what John's talking about. And that's also how it extends into relevance for our day. And symbols, yeah, the symbols definitely play a big part in that. I don't think any symbols are inherently evil. They're kind of neutral. They can be used for good or for evil. So and that's, as you kind of alluded to with Hollywood, you know, that they play a big role in manipulating and controlling symbols to give us our stories, our myths, so that we, again, it's sort of an arm of the control structure. And you mentioned some of the elite writings, and that's really what, you know, Bernays and different people who have written on propaganda and the different techniques and strategies of propaganda, you know, they see Hollywood as that, just one of the arms of the power structure to give us the worldview that they want us to have. You had mentioned the Matrix films. I did do a pretty lengthy analysis of the original Matrix trilogy, I think in the second book that I wrote, and then we talked about the new one coming out. I tend to think that the new one that's coming out will probably be related to the rolling out of the metaverse. So that's probably what I see that as, is just sort of propaganda to get people more warmed up to immersing themselves in the metaverse. I mean, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong even with VR or playing video games or anything like that, but I think they really want to get people to dissociate from reality, live in these alternate realities, which are just synthetic, you know, gamifications of reality. And that even ties in MKUltra, because MKUltra in large part was about dissociation, and not just dissociation on an individual, you know, spy programmed assassin level, but dissociation on a macro scale. How can they get the public to be dissociated from their normal ways of living into these alternate states of living, alternate states of reality? And that's precisely what I think the metaverse is intended to be. And that's what I think the purpose of the Matrix Part 4. I mean, obviously it's a cash cow type of thing too, but I think it's coming out at this stage right before the metaverse rolls out.
You can never assume there's a singular purpose to any piece of art, first of all, objectively. And then on top of it, just like Bernays shows us in the very primary writing that he does there, which, you know, evolved later. I mean, obviously, Bernays did not necessarily envision the landscape we find ourselves in today, but it all still works. It's not as though it's an outmoded way of operating, and it makes perfect sense still. So of course you would have to analyze his stuff. Now, when it comes to the Matrix 4, just like the other movies, I think there are multiple layers and multiple levels and multiple interpretations that can be had. Even I have argued that and nobody likes this argument, but I've argued that, you know, the overall message here that you must understand if you're watching that is that nobody ever left. And, you know, the red pill, the blue pill, what about no pill? You know, how about that? And that's never even an option here. And it was still adopted by people who sought to present themselves in an alternative way. And yes, I'm speaking all the way around the fact that controlled opposition is designed by, guess what, the establishment. And that's the way I view those things altogether. However, I think this might take it further. And when we analyze everything, you know, that we can in that presentation coming up, you know, in just a few weeks here, well, there might be a lot of different levels that we have not yet seen. You know, I mean, it's only the teaser trailers available so far. Mm-hmm. Then again, it could just be junk and it could just be a cash grab, which, you know, would be fine by me. But I think that these things have a tendency to continue to echo and become parts of the interpretation of reality later and are more influential than we can imagine. Now, when you talk about the scripture, though, I wasn't even necessarily trying to address the prophetic end of it. I wasn't even trying to address it from the, you know, how legitimate is it or anything else. All I'm saying is that whether you take Star Wars or the Bible as a template, if it is accessible to the masses, it is also useful as a way of a reckoning with a control system that you wish to implement. So do I sound crazy to you, Mr. Dyer?
No, I mean, I don't think it's crazy. Maybe I'm just not understanding. Are you saying that, like, maybe the Book of Revelation was written as a control system? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, no, I wouldn't even begin to argue that with anybody unless we're going to dedicate the whole time to it. And I'm not even making that argument. What I'm saying is that because it is something that is of significance to the masses, it is useful to anyone that wishes to implement a control grid as a template. Like I said, even Star Wars can be useful to implement a template for controlling people. Look, you understand how it works with the Jedi, so therefore, you know, we can give you the good guys to root for. We can tell you that there is the Imperial system, and this is the way, you know what I mean? You create the legend one way or another, whether it is based on fact or it is based on prophecy or it is based on, you know, the hero's journey. It's all relevant that as long as it's accessible to the public, it can be consumable as a guideline, an outline, so to speak, for what is yet to come. And I see this, you know, this concept of, well, at some point we may create a system where there are people outside of the system who cannot, you know, and of course I'm thinking of vaccines here at the moment, because it's one of the trigger points for me. I don't know how you feel about it exactly, but and maybe you don't want to address it. That's fine. But when I take a look at all of the power grabs that have happened over the course of my lifetime, and I'm only 49, it appears to me as though there is always a legend which is acceptable. And this is utilized by individuals that wish to exert their will upon the masses. One way or another. And like I said, it could be the common trope of Star Wars. It could be the Matrix. It could be the Bible. It could be, you know, the common idea that was introduced in a television program that was very popular. There's lots of different ways to go about this. And I feel as though there is a serious shift here that we have yet to actually see where the sort of, you know, the final solution, if you will, is regarding all this. I think it is being implemented step by step, and I'm wondering what your feelings are about that as we move forward into what I think may be one of the most perilous times in modern human history.
Well, yeah, I think that the Great Reset, which I've done quite a bit of studying and following in the last couple of years and reading Klaus's books and whatnot, I think that's definitely the rolling out of a business plan. I mean, it's really something that has been in the works for a long time, and we're kind of at the phase of what you could say is like a Jacobin year zero, where the elites kind of want to start over, wipe the slate, reset civilization to a year zero, which, if you know about the French Revolution, they basically try to get rid of all previous tradition and culture, literally start over with like a new calendar, and they invented these secular holidays, and they tried to give it like a new secular mythology to the French Republic. And of course, this led to a giant bloodbath and tens of thousands of people getting killed. And the ideal republic intended, you know, they intended to erect that, which was just fantasy, you know, utopian kind of communist fantasy. And of course, it didn't work. It will never work. But the difference is that that same kind of idea underpins a lot of today's technocratic sort of utopians who combine it with the Malthusian idea, you know, by which they think they can really just get rid of most of human beings and merge with, you know, computers and transhumanism and all that. But that's really the overall plan. And if you look at, say, Clauss's Fourth Industrial Revolution, I mean, that's what that book posits. It posits that now is the time to seize this, you know, great coup-fit opportunity and then roll out this technocratic control grid. And that includes everything from, you know, Internet of Things to nanotech chipping of the population, which is probably what these stabbies are all about. It includes massive depop. It includes, you know, Skynet type technology. So all of that is integrated into one single giant grid. So that's what they're after.
Well, see, I was going to ask you to give a sort of back of the book definition of the Great Reset. And you know what? You did it without me asking. So you did it. And this is relevant. I have a serious question about that I never hear anybody answer, who describes in their own way the Great Reset. And that is the why. Why is this necessary? I mean, is it not profitable for the, you know, upper billionaire class who did oh so well during the lockdowns, of course, and has done oh so well in recent times, regardless of which figurehead is in office? The stateless and you know, absolutely faithless individuals who have profited off of the misery of others by accruing wealth. Mm-hmm. In a very small group of people's hands, it seems to have been profitable. It seems to have worked out pretty well for the chosen. Okay, at the top of the invisible, well, pyramid.
Yeah.
Why would they seek to reset now? Do you have an opinion on this?
I think that you could say from the vantage point of an individual technocrat or whoever is part of the structure, their psychology is psychopathic and sort of out of control. So they kind of have the unbridled, they're just sort of impelled by a spirit to do this. And that's what, you know, if you look at the history of dictators and tyrants, they kind of go crazy. You know, they go mad with power. And they just turn into these bloodthirsty murderers. So I think there's an element of that going on, maybe at the individual psyche of these so-called elites. And then there's also the potentiality that they're part of a cult. So I think that there is some reality to that. I don't know that necessarily every member of the elite is part of the same cult, but many of them are, and many of them believe that they believe the delusion that they're going to, you know, transcend the limitations of time and space through technology. Right. They'll be made immortal, but they have to go along with basically a mass human sacrifice. So I think both of those things combine. And you know, some of them may be atheists who don't have any religious beliefs, but they still believe that, you know, they have to do this for this to save the planet. And because they're just power crazy. And like previous dictators, they've just lost their mind. They're basically possessed, in my view.
Well, see, they may seem possessed. Hold on a second, because they may seem possessed to people like you and me who, I don't know, have this, you know, absurd idea that the value of life might be, you know, priceless, right? The value of our fellow creatures, our fellow men and women, they just indeed might be a primary concern to people like you and me. But if you consider that all along the way, on your way up the top of the pyramid, there are plenty of individuals who are not even necessarily true psychopaths, but are addicts, really. And what are they addicts for? They're addicts for victory, for domination. And no matter how much money they accrue, even if they get to the billionaire class and they're still part of the middle management team, more is never enough. Like the addict's mindset, except in their case, it's about domination.
Exactly. Now, yeah, it's an addiction to that. Exactly. Yeah.
And, well put. And then when you get to the top, I mean, it's I hate to even say this because I'm not usually the guy who makes the hyperbolic statement regarding, well, a subject I'm going to go back to in a little bit, like the Antichrist and the idea of the adversary. But when you take a look at modern Satanism, what is the overriding principle? You are your own God. And if you think about that, it's very possible that the – I hate to use the term cabal because it's been misused, but the cabal at the very, very top could be at its core satanic in that they believe themselves to be literally above their fellow man, that they are the god of the gods of this world and really not even pleased to share it with one another, that they are individuals almost – again, it goes back to psychopathic kind of thought processes again, right? I'm thinking out loud here, Jay.
You know, I would agree with that overall assessment, sure.
Yeah, and that's the thing is that if you imagine, okay, and I know this is hard for you and I to imagine, but if you imagine I'm the god of this world and really the only reason why all of you exist is because you're a figment of my imagination. And, well, I can do with you as I please, just like, you know, dreaming and having control of your dreams, right? It's my dream. It's my game. It's my reality. It's my simulation. It's my world.
Mm-hmm.
Again, this is not me speaking from my heart. This is just me imagining what the mindset would have to be to get this kind of behavior to be acceptable in your ethos, so to speak, right? Does that sound insane to you?
No, again, I would agree with that basic assessment. I don't think it sounds insane at all. I think that even if you didn't have a religious perspective at all, if you just looked at it from like a psychology perspective, again, it just seems that seems to be the motivations of tyrants in history. You know, that think about that Elizabeth Bathory or whatever, who would steal women and coat herself in their blood. I mean, that's we see this kind of a behavior by tyrants all the time.
Right, right. And that's the fascinating thing. Again, we're seeing the global agenda not necessarily appearing coherent, but it's all going in the same direction one way or another. Very much I'm covering on my show what's going on in Australia because, oddly enough, they seem to be ahead of the agenda here in the U.S., which is far more convoluted, and it appears to be on purpose. I think confusion is built into the model as well.
Yeah, chaos for sure, maximum chaos. Yeah.
Well, maximum chaos, but within the boundaries of their narrative, you see. You're meant to be confused, but only confused about what they want you to be thinking about.
Yeah.
Seems to be the program. And it's unbelievable to me that, again, in the course of my lifetime, I'm 49. It's so weird that we have gone from a place where we could be so much more interconnected through technology. We could be so much more educated through technology. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, what has outpaced that has been the control. And that is really disheartening. You know, the hopes of what we thought was coming when, the military had something like an internet long time.
Yeah, right.
But once we heard that was coming, the idea that you could share information instantaneously from different parts of the world, travel might not even be necessary. Of course, we get a taste of that during COVID lockdown where everybody's doing their business through Zoom and having family meetings this way and everything else. It's like always the tools of what could be righteous expansion and evolution in the human character are constantly turned against the human family, for lack of a better term. Do you see this as the consistent narrative in history? And if that is the case, at what point is a legitimate resistance going to make any progress against it?
Well, one of the documents I recently covered was the Silent Weapons for Quiet Wars document, and it actually appeals to history to make that very point, that you take human energy and turn it against humans themselves. You turn humans against other humans, and you turn In the case of that document, they use the economy as an example. You flip the economy into being a debt-based system so that everybody basically just spends all their time and energy trying to get out of a debt that they're born into, that the more that they buy into the system, the more they further their own debt. So literally that's what the Silent Weapons document says, and that's, you know, one of these elite documents, white papers that I cover. And it really, it's making that point that you just said, and they appeal back to the fiat banking scam that, you know, was discovered long ago. So yeah, just using energy systems as an example, that's precisely what's going on. And, is there hope? Well, I mean, I have a religious perspective as an Orthodox Christian that I think there's hope, but, yeah, that's the easiest, simplest answer I could give to that question.
Okay, so look, I have an understanding of Christianity, and it is a little bit more liberal than some. You know, I got to ask this question of you since you identified yourself as an Orthodox Christian, and this is a point of contention. So I apologize if this is even offensive. But
we do debates all the time. It's not going to bother me.
Yeah, no, I don't want to debate. I'm asking. No,
I'm just saying I don't get upset if somebody has an objection.
Oh, excellent. Great. Because that makes me feel better about asking this. I get the sense from some people that identify themselves in a similar way, mm-hmm. where they have an Orthodox point of view one way or another. And that may vary. I mean, there's Greek Orthodox, there is, you know, the Catholic system, and all of them would identify themselves as we're the strict ones. But I'm getting a sense in general from people of that sort that, I don't know, over the years, it's like at some point we're going to have to come to a cataclysmic event before there is reconciliation, before sanity returns to the planet. Like, it's got to get a whole lot worse and really go into, you know, days of madness on the planet before there is a time of peace and reconstruction that will make sense. And I'm wondering, do you think that is the general viewpoint that you understand as an Orthodox Christian?
No, not necessarily. I don't, and we wouldn't typically say that we know for sure when the end of the world is or that things have to get really bad. That's maybe more so kind of a typical evangelical kind of mindset that, you know, a lot of evangelicals kind of focus on end times type of stuff. You know, they set dates and talk about tribulation all the time. No, we don't typically do that. I mean, we do have some ideas about you know, what the end will look like and that there will be an antichrist type of figure. But, you know, that might be 10,000 years from now. Who knows? So, no, I don't think there's any necessary doom attitude or, you know, the world's going to end next week. So, you know, I don't think we would typically have that attitude, no.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing is that when I say that, you know, sort of thing to somebody who presents this to me, where I say, well, does that mean you think the world has to end before it can begin again anew? They say, no, you just got to understand that this is actually a happy thing, that, you know, the world will sort of be cleansed. And, yeah, it's true the evangelicals are more about that sort of about that sort of concept, let's just say. I mean, I'm trying to be real loose about this so that I'm not pinning anything down on anybody in particular, but it's just, this is the sense I'm getting from some people that, well, I'm just waiting for, you know, pardon the expression, but for all hell to break loose, because after that, it'll be okay. You know, and that's coming soon. And of course, as you said, you know, it's always coming soon. You know, whether it was the Jehovah's Witnesses knocking on my door some years ago, or it's individuals trying to convince me that, you know, literally there are figures on the earth that are akin to those that are being represented in the narrative that I do believe you're correct about regarding Nero. One way or another, it seems to me that this is a common sort of trope that people go to if they don't fully understand what they're looking at. And it's being encouraged among masses of people. Mm-hmm. And I worry, again, like, because I understand predictive programming to some degree, that, you know, somebody may indeed think that it's a good idea to set things in motion to accomplish what they believe is God's will, so to speak.
Yeah, no, we just did a podcast recently actually talking about the Pentagon, CIA, different intelligence agencies utilizing evangelical end times views as geopolitical tools and strategies. So, mm-hmm. No, that definitely goes on, and that's something that we have definitely covered many times in podcasts over the last at least 5 years.
Right. Well, obviously, this is why I'm bringing it up to you, because I wanted to get your sort of unfettered responses to these things. Mm-hmm. But what am I missing in this equation in general? Like I said, because, I mean, we could point to specific events. We could point to the moral decline that we see. Of course, that has been talked about almost my entire life, where you know, the country is falling apart because the morals of the people have fallen apart. And I find that in commentary in history at various times when various empires mm-hmm. appeared to be in decline, mm-hmm. that this was often the go-to explanation. You know, it's not the tyrant's fault, but it is the fault of the people who have fallen into disrepair. And then you ask the question, well, if you're the one who gives the commandments, and in some tyrannical structures, they were literally representatives of God, right? Mm-hmm. Whether, you know, remember, thou art mortal, when meeting the Roman emperor, you should address the Egyptian emperor, Pharaoh, as, you know, the relative to God as well, right? Different times in history, and we don't have to even go to ancient history for people who thought as though they had God-like abilities to rule over people. Mm-hmm. You know, and I wonder again, through the technocracy, if we're not dealing with that also, and one says to themselves, well, you know, gee, if you're the one ruling everybody and you're supposed to be in control of everything, how can you blame the people for the morals which you have decided to ensconce in law and culture and everything else, right? I mean, it's the weirdest argument that goes on there, but... you know, do you think it's the people that are in moral decline, or is it the leadership, or is it just a general collective thing that is happening?
I think it could be a both and. I mean, I think you can have evil leaders that influence people towards evil, and that kind of becomes a symbiotic relationship between the people and their leader. But you can also have, you know, a degenerate population as well. And you can have even leaders who might introduce moral reforms at times. So I don't think there's any necessary either or to the complexities of history with that kind of a question. But I would just answer with it can be both and. But in our situation today, I think that we've undergone in the last few generations, you know, some of the most sophisticated biological manipulation, technological manipulation, psychological warfare manipulation. So I would lay most of the blame, at least in the last few generations, on the elite and not the population, although that doesn't necessarily mean that the population isn't to a degree culpable insofar as they willfully, you know, are ignorant or participate when they shouldn't. So, again, there's no easy, you know, like good guy, bad guy in this kind of stuff.
Well, right, and I think the causation here when it comes to the population is not something that is easily, you know, described as being the responsibility of one singular thing in any way, shape, sure. or form, because yep. you have the biochemical aspect, which you mentioned there, and one could go through whether you believe them all or not, Jay, I'm not sure, but let's just run real fast through the idea that, you know, there's fluoride in the water, the food is not necessarily food, right. It appears as though they're spraying things over our head, whatever they may be.
I agree, yeah.
You know, and there is the psychological element, the dumbing down, and the dependence upon electronic devices here in the Western world, which has certainly limited the natural, and I do say again, the natural inclination of the human species to be psychosocial and directly connect with one another on a physical and otherwise
right.
Indescribable level. You know, socialization in and of itself has been warped, especially in the latest decades that we have just experienced. And that has an effect on the species for sure. And then when you combine it with the pharmaceutical companies, you know, continuously repackaging addictive substances and offering up plenty of things to alter brain chemistry one way or another, introducing them to younger and younger people whose brains are not fully formed, et cetera, and traumatic mass events one way or another, whether they are orchestrated or allowed to happen or simply amped up by presentations and broadcast to you directly. Mm-hmm. Here we go. All of these things are having a mass effect. And one could say that, you know, on the one hand, is it the, you know, the people that are in such a state of decadence and, you know, deplorable moral condition that they're causing this, or is it being caused by all of this? Like you said, it's an either and or, you know, where in some instances it may be both, it may be all, it may be some, but one way or another, there's a lot of pressures on the natural, you know, organism that we are. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, here we go. I always find this refreshing, though, when somebody says, look, it's not a simple answer, and it's not because I'm dodging it. It's because, you know, we don't live in black and white terms.
Sure.
Quite frankly, the world is in shades of gray, and you need to know that because some things are much darker than others. And what is the point of being a con man if you can't get the confidence of the people? And isn't that the greatest game of all? You get the confidence of the people to agree to literally participate in their own self-destruction. I mean, that's right. The easiest thing. You know, rounding up people with an army and trying to restrict people. And even this idea that, you know, camps, and I know there's some discussion about that now where – they may be indeed concentrating people into camps or planning to. And that's been a discussion for a while. But my argument all along has been, well, that's a whole lot more expensive and labor intensive operation than simply convincing people to do what? Detonate, destroy themselves in place. And that seems to be the more successful program and can be done without really attracting any sort of a great alarm from the rest of the masses who aren't being directly targeted at the moment. So, you know, what are your thoughts about that? The encouragement of, you know, the powers that should not be to cause us to turn on one another and destroy ourselves. Does that not seem to be the MO, so to speak?
That's the fundamental. Yeah, that's the fundamental plan at work here. And you could look at the whole, all of it, under that umbrella, basically, under that umbrella corporation, so to speak. And that's exactly what they're after. And that's why when you look at each domain, whether it's like social interactions, you get, you know, men and women to be against each other. You get racial intensity and division on purpose. You get generational divides between boomers and millennials. You get at every turn, right, they're basically trying to, and that really fits into the social Darwinian perspective, too, of survival of the fittest. And, you know, it's incumbent upon me to attain wealth at all cost. And that's just me climbing the Darwinian ladder and squishing anyone else who gets in my way. The whole mindset of modernity is built on these very ideas. So they're all toxic. They're all self-destructive. And that's the thing is that, although we don't have to collapse as a civilization, if we continue with these kinds of toxic ideologies, we will, because they have built within them that they're not sustainable. And I say that in the true sense, not in the baloney green agenda sense of sustainability.
Oh, right. No, I understand. We're not talking Agenda 2020 or 2021 sustainability. We're talking about the actual definition of sustainability. Right. And there is a curiosity there because it seems as though this would be very hard to maintain, if people offered some level of resistance. So dangerous question to some people, but I think you can handle it. What is the proper way? Somebody's listening to you and they have listened to you over the years, or maybe they're hearing you for the first time on my show, whatever. It doesn't matter. You just resonated with them. They see this and everything else. What do they do? What can an individual think to do to begin to assist with what must be a cooperative resistance one way or another. Even if we don't necessarily collude with one another, we're going to have to collectively push back because, you know, the old adage, right, you know, hanging together or hanging apart, that will be the end of this if something is not done properly here. What is your suggestion for the individual who says, okay, I agree with all this. I see it all. I see it worse than you guys do. You guys are underplaying this. You guys are overdoing it a little. Whatever. They're in our general sort of spectrum regarding this thought. What do they do?
Well, I can say what I favor doing. And my plan has been to get out of big cities. So, you know, really practical things like moving towards, you know, I never would really thought of myself as a prepper, but moving towards that kind of stuff. We just bought a generator. We bought storable food. I believe in, you know, self-defense, owning guns. I believe in gold, silver, Bitcoin, other cryptos, if you research them and find out that they're not centralized projects. So I think those are great ways to try to be off the grid as possible. And then, you know, again, I'm an Orthodox Christian, so I believe in that. And then building and finding community with people that's real and not just virtual, not just on the internet. Trying to build businesses and independent ways of living. Like a lot of my, I'm not a homesteader, but a lot of my friends have moved into homesteading. So that might be an option for people if they can do that. So those are really just the simple practical things that, you know, being able to grow your own food, have your own food that's not reliant on, you know, Fortune 100, Fortune 500, start pulling your money out of that kind of crap. You know, buy from people in your community and not these Fortune 100 entities. So those are the simple things I say.
Yeah, no, look, these are primary things that we should all be working toward, I think.
Oh, and your diet, change your diet. I'm a big fan of keto, carnivore diet. So those are some good examples. I'm a big fan of, you know, healthy supplements. Shout out to mysponsorchalk.com. So those are the things I recommend.
No, look, fair enough. And if we begin with what we put into our bodies, and that'll increase our ability to do anything that we seek to do in the future anyway.
Right.
Because as I said, you know, even the water, I would suggest, you know, you also.
Oh, I forgot water
sources. Well. Yeah, no problem. That's what I'm here for. I would suggest, you know, developing a water source which is not dependent upon a municipality or the individuals that are putting God knows what chemicals in. I mean, if you don't want to sleep at night, check to see what your local municipality's water testing has come up with and what is acceptable in it. Yeah, because you won't want to cook with it or shower with it again. But look. These things are great for the individual to try and insulate you to give you a chance. I've always said, though, that even the guns, which I favor as well, are not going to stop the overly oppressive, overarching moves that could be made against you. And it is good to decentralize so that it makes it harder. But would this actually be enough unless a very significant portion of the population did it? Would it be enough to make a stake that is significant against the ever rolling agenda here, the machine, so to speak, that is rolling toward us, regardless of what it is we say about it, regardless of, you know.
I think if you have enough people moved to the country and became like homesteaders, yeah, I think that would really freak the system out because, you know, I mean, they just, Klaus and Bill Gates are saying you're not going to eat meat anymore, so. If enough people just said, screw you, we don't care what you think, that would be how we win.
Well, and that's the other thing is knowing the environment in which you're in. You know, a guy named Alan Kay came on this show some years ago. He had won the History Channel thing Alone, you know, where they have to survive out there. Mm-hmm. But he was about situational awareness and being aware of what it is you have naturally occurring in an area. And that includes animal life, by the way, because if you're going to hunt, you should know how to really manage the population in a direct sense. And I know some people don't want to eat meat at all, and that's fine if that's your choice. I don't know how you do that, but knowing how to manage the natural animal population in the area, knowing what the botanical possibilities are right under your feet in some cases, there are things that can be useful as food and as medicine that you have literally been taught to ignore.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
You know, and that was one of his things, is situational awareness in all things. Also, he was an advocate of self-defense and a guy who, you know, felt kind of crappy about being on the corporate, you know, run thing when it came to the History Channel. And didn't even want to return to my show after a while, because you know what he's doing is exactly what you said. He's got his farm, he's got his animals, he's got his crops, and he tried to teach people how to do that for a while and felt as though his message was not being taken seriously enough by people.
Well, I bet it would be now.
Well, that's the thing, is I've tried to encourage him since. No, come back.
Yeah.
We need you, because sadly, there was a time when I think a lot of men in this country, for sure, and women too, but men primarily were taught how to fish, hunt, and acquire things without necessarily having to participate. And guess what? The energy management system that is currency, according to and look, I'm not even talking about a particular central bank or anything else. I'm talking about the decoupled energy from the source that is the monetary system in general.
Uh-huh.
And there was a time that you could fish, you could hunt, you could find things in the woods. Mm-hmm. And we encourage this among especially the males, but females as well. You know, how do you do this? And that's kind of been lost, I mean, in the time I've been alive. What are your thoughts there?
No, that's unfortunate. But, I mean, again, I think, you know, things get worse and worse in the next couple of years, we're going to be forced to do this kind of stuff. So, you know, I'm fortunate to live in the South, and a lot of people in the South grew up with that. I'm not some kind of like super, you know, outdoorsman person, but, you know, I do know how to fish. I've been hunting, although I'm not like a real hunter type of person, but everybody around me does hunt, and everybody here owns guns. So it's not, you know, it'd be very difficult to totally change the existing society in the South, which of course they are trying to do. But, you know, again, hopefully they won't be successful at that. But yeah, it's unfortunate that a lot of people have forgotten a lot of these skills, but they're also, I think, becoming more and more popular and experiencing a kind of a resurgence and a revival.
Well, I hope so, because look, you probably can't tell from my accent, but I'm sitting in Macon, Georgia, right?
Okay.
It's not where I grew up, but I grew up in the Northeast, New York, New Jersey area, and believe me, I understand urban survivalism. Which, by the way, some of the people around here don't, but I kind of admire the culture that, you know, has a shotgun at the very least in every house, which I experience here in Georgia. The idea that I don't meet too many men who don't know how to at least do some of those things, that was a rarity in the Northeast, frankly. I mean, there were some guys that were hunters and this and that, but they didn't necessarily know much else outside of go and shoot a deer and bring it home.
Yeah.
You know, I've learned how to literally butcher an animal properly, and I feel just fine about that. It is a good thing to go ahead and have to harvest your own meat. I don't think that's a problem. And if you manage the wildlife population, you're actually, in a strange way, doing them a favor, because they don't necessarily have enough resources naturally anymore in a lot of places to survive on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something that was generally referred to as conservation, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Literally, you know, bearing down on the population and limiting it, so that animals weren't starving to death and running into the roads like they do in overdeveloped and sprawling places in the Northeast. And it's an interesting thing. It's a totally different mindset, but they are attacking that even here in the South. So in the last couple of minutes, Jay, first of all, I want to thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
Also, give you an opportunity to tell people where they should go. I mean, you said that sometimes you host one of the Alex Jones hours. But I want to know about Jay Dyer's work outside of that. You know, give me some links that I can send people to, and I'll put them in the show notes along with the podcast here tonight, and get people to take a look at your work if they haven't already. And if you have, I'm sorry, I'm shoving something at you you've already looked at. But if not, or if you haven't done it lately, I think it is extremely worthy of the listener's examination to go into all of the things that you have worked on and are currently working on. And I don't necessarily have to agree with every single point of view Jay Dyer has. I'm telling you that the information that he presents is worthy of examination. And again, by the way, don't feel bad. I say that about everybody because guess what? You know, we're not in a cult here. Nobody has to agree with everybody on everything. Okay. That's the way I see it. And we can come at things from different angles. And you know what? That's how we can educate each other a little bit, too. That's always helpful. You don't have to just speak to the choir. But, Jay, with a couple of minutes here, go right ahead and, you know, take all the time you need. Tell people where you want them to go. If there's a social media that you want people to reach out to you on or an email or if there's a current special event, anything. Go ahead.
Easiest place is just my website, which is jaysanalysis.com, and that has basically all of my material there. And that's kind of the hub for the people that subscribe to my content. So I have, subscriber content, which is like the last 5 years of information and lectures and interviews and talks that I've done with people. There's a YouTube channel that's me, and then all the other social medias are just under my name. And at the website, you can get my books, and I offer signed copies there so that people aren't just paying Jeff Bezos money. So you can get my books, my wife's books, stuff that she makes, like her creams and whatnot for the ladies. And I'm also on Rockfin, so I do exclusive content over there, which is a free speech-based platform. So that's R-O-K-F-I-N. That's pretty much it. That's me. That's what I do.
Excellent. Look, I'm sorry. I didn't even mention your wife. But
no, it's okay.
You know, this is our first meeting, so to speak. And you and I have actually known people mutually over the years. And it's really great to be able to sit down and talk with you. And I love that you are so rational, so informative about the things that I sort of tested. You know, some people would get upset with me for asking and positing certain things here and not want to go in certain directions. But again, you know, as an experienced guy like you would be, you're accustomed to the idea that, you know what, somebody might not ask you the question exactly the way you want, but you're still going to try and inform them. And whether it's me or the listener, just want to let you know that you're very much appreciated. And I hope we can do this again. Seriously, about that Matrix deal. And, I said I was going to come back to the Antichrist, but I think you actually handled it because the listener is now reminding me live that I didn't go back to that. But Jay answered everything even when I didn't ask him. See, that's kind of what went on here. Sorry, Jay. I'm talking to the
It's okay. That's, and I'd be glad to come back, discuss the Matrix and doing a film breakdown or whatever.
Yeah, I think it might be necessary. And if you don't believe me that it's necessary, take a look at Jay's past work on it. As you said, it's in one of which book is that in, by the way?
The Matrix Analysis is towards the end of the second book.
Okay. So there you go. Right there. Worthy of going and picking up his second book if you haven't already. Mm-hmm. And like you said, jaysanalysis.com.
Correct.
Right? All one word, Jays, like J-A-Y-S, and then analysis.com.
Correct.
And that's the good starting point. You'll be able to get to his social media, his books. Like he said, autograph books available there if you'd like. And that way you don't have to pay Bezos any money so that he can write off on his taxes again for his kids, even though he's controlling billions of dollars. I'm sorry, Jay.
No, I know.
You know, just you mentioned Bezos, and it's either I'm going to talk about Captain Kirk and what went on there or his tax write-off, which I'm sorry, has me angry. Anyway, Jay Dyer. In the first hour of the Ocelli Effect, unique discussion. And in the next hour, we're going to hear from Australia. And I'm worried for our brothers down under, but we'll see how worried I need to be. Jay Dyer, again, thanks for doing this.
Thank you.
Stick around. The Ocelli Effect will continue after this.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold. Silver, the stock market, WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now.
Go there now. Learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I'll say all power to the people.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelley.
Second hour of the O'Shelley Effect continues now at O'Shelley.com. But, of course, you could be hearing this some other time, some other place, some other way. So welcome to it. It is Woden's Day or Wednesday to most of you on that thing we call a calendar, allegedly. Anyway, I wanted to check in with what's going on in Australia. Now, funny thing, we've had a little bit of a shuffle here. And I'm not sure if we might have a special guest or two before the hour's over because, you know, it's not Wednesday in Australia. It's Thursday. And I think it's the middle. No, wait a minute. What time is it here? It might be like 9 a.m. in Australia, I think, or at least part of Australia. I don't even know if they have one time zone, honestly. It's so strange to me. Anyway, look. We have to get to this. Don Jeffries covered it for sure. And with our friend Ben, who has been on, and by the way, I stole Ben from Don Jeffries in the first place. And he's been on my show multiple times, been on Don's show, I think once, like today. And I totally screwed up Don's time. So you have a shortened Don Jeffries show today, but it is action packed with clips and the guy that I'm about to bring to air here, who I've called Australian Ben. But of course, you do have a last name and all that, but I prefer to still call you Australian Ben. So, Ben, first of all, I know you were just on the air with Don, and we may have some slightly different things to report here, but really appreciate you coming on. And even the other guest I had coming on from Australia couldn't quite make it, but I think it was because of a miscommunication over time. How are you tonight, Ben?
Yeah, I'm great, Chuck. It's just gone 10 past 12, mate, so it's just gone past high noon here on the Gold Coast. Thanks for welcoming me onto the program once more. I really look forward to touching base with you, mate. I love your take on things, and you've got an interesting take on things, but I think you're spot on with your take on things, so it's a pleasure.
Well, I appreciate it, man. And look, I try and glean information from people on the ground, which, by the way, quick shout out to my friend Amir, who is in Ukraine. And I have not heard from him in a bit. I hope he's still hearing the show, and I hope he's well, considering the reports that I'm seeing coming out of there. I'm not certain as to exactly what's going on there, but as we well know, we might be concerned about the people of Ukraine being stepped on by one imperial power or another in the midst of all the rest of the global madness that is. But Amir, if you are able to listen, just shoot me a message, please, and let me know that you are okay. I get reports from him, which would be funny if I had him on with you. The two of you would actually have the same accent because he grew up in Australia, partially after fleeing, ready for this one, but, you know, what they used to call Yugoslavia, right? And then he ends up going and growing up in Australia and then living in Ukraine. The guy has been in some interesting places, and his accent in general sounds a lot like yours, to be honest with you. But of course, he speaks several languages, and anyway, Amir, just a quick moment there to say I hope you're well, and that's what I'm primarily concerned with. I'd love a report, but even if you can just inform me that you're doing okay, man, I'd like to know. And somebody said they saw you maybe in the chat room the other night, but you didn't say anything. If that's the case, just a message to let me know you're still breathing. I'd appreciate it, brother. All right. So, Ben, back to you. And what is happening in Australia, as we've demonstrated in previous shows and as has probably accelerated, our friends down under might be in a more precarious position than we find ourselves in the U.S., where there is a slow walk and a confusing sort of narrative regarding, well, what is fully vaccinated at this point? What should we be allowed to do? And in New York City, you know, on the one hand, the carrot, and on the other hand, the stick. They've turned around and created a safe space for people to shoot dope, but there is no safe space if you didn't shoot up the vaccine, because you're not allowed to go anywhere in New York now unless you did. But if you're fully vaccinated, you can go to the site to shoot up heroin, which, by the way, I don't morally object to a safe site to do that. might actually be something that does less harm than what we currently deal with. But I find it ironic that safe space to shoot dope, but no safe space if you didn't take the government's approved shot. Very weird. Anyway, just a point I wanted to make. And we're seeing this dynamic emerge that you so well illustrated on the Donald Jeffries show just a little while ago, and have illustrated on this show. I mean, what further developments do we have? And you've also given me some clips, so I'll let you tell the story of those before we run out of time. But, you know, is there any really major update that you should give to my audience directly about what's happening down there?
Well, Chuck, I guess the major update, mate, is the new normal. The new normal has encapsulated the globe. It might not affect each one of us individually in times in our lives, depending on where we live. But if we try to operate at a legitimate level, if you're trying to operate in a bureaucracy, if you're trying to operate as a diplomat, the world has changed, and therefore all of that is going to funnel down and is going to filter through to us, the people below. So the new normal is here. There's been recent surges in the European Union, as we know. That serves as a bit of a warning here for us in Australia, or our leaders will look at something happening around the globe and they'll say, well, hang on a second. Just when we thought we were out, you know, we're getting pulled back in here a little bit because we better take every precaution because look what's happening in Sweden, or most recently, look what's happened in Germany. Look what's happened in Austria. Austria has decided, even though their population is 80% vaccinated, they've had more cases in the last few months than what they've ever had previously, even though they've got an almost fully vaccinated population. So they've once again decided that lockdowns are the best measure. Initially, we were told, Chuck, through all of this, and this is why I refer to it, you know, we have to start the conversation at the new normal, because things have changed. Initially, it was masks, and then it was social distancing, and everyone complied, everyone got on board, we tried to do the right thing. Weeks led into months, months led into speculation about what was the right vaccine. Donald Trump's vaccine was a kill shot that Kamala Harris wouldn't take, that people here in Australia said they wouldn't take. Why? Because Donald Trump said that's the vaccine. We go a year from that point, and those same people are saying, take the vaccine. If you don't take it, you're not with us. The new normal is a real thing. Norway has reinstated lockdowns and restrictions for their people. So it jumps from America to New Zealand to Australia to England to Germany to Austria.
Here's a question I have, actually, as I'm listening to you, and I don't know if anybody's asked you yet. What is the manufacturers that are acceptable in Australia? Because they do differ in various countries. And we were confronted in the U.S. with three manufacturers being approved right away. You know, the Moderna, the Pfizer, both of them were two-shot solutions. The Johnson & Johnson was supposed to be a one-shot solution. Now the definition of being fully vaccinated goes beyond that. They say it includes at least a booster, and they're even talking about you can mix them and match them a bit. And it all sounds very weird and unsciency to me, but, you know, nonetheless, it is the powers that be are saying it, so I wanted to know, what is the manufacturers in Australia that are approved by the government? Do you know?
Yeah, I have some information on that, Chuck. I'll set the table, I guess. The World Health Organization, their chief spokesperson, released a statement last week saying that there is no evidence that booster jabs will offer greater protection for the healthy against the new COVID-19 variant Omicron. So the World Health Organization, we have to take a step back and just think, the World Health Organization have just told us that booster jabs, they won't offer greater protection But if you ask, where are we now? What are we doing? Well, we're full steam ahead, mate. We're getting on board with things. If you don't take the jabs, if you don't get the jabs, and those jabs are provided by Pfizer, Moderna, AstraZeneca, they're interchangeable. Some also breaking news, Dan Andrews, the Premier of Victoria, has come to the rescue and assured people, don't worry, because Victoria, would you believe, are manufacturing a brand new mRNA vaccine that they believe will bust the Omicron variant. Oh. Melbourne-made vaccine could potentially bust this variant. So it's okay, folks. Dan Andrews is looking after everyone. Yeah, Victoria's had their problems, but they may just be the people to make the new vaccine to save the world.
See, now, AstraZeneca didn't get approved by our governmental organizations initially. I'm not even sure if it has been by now, but I don't think so. And you didn't even get the Johnson & Johnson choice, which I find remarkable in and of itself. But meanwhile, Australia is not the only place developing, allegedly, a vaccine, right? We heard in the initial days about the Russian vaccine. We heard that the Chinese had one. Don't trust those. But we heard they had them. And, of course, the grand, you know, stateless corporate entities would present us, you know, look, you can take some of ours. You can take some of theirs. Depends everywhere. I mean, listening to the propaganda here, first of all, it disagrees with the World Health Organization. I mean, no matter what, get your shots, shots, shots. And it sounds to me almost like take them all is what they're saying here, which is a lot of shots, first and foremost. But secondly, the information contradicts itself, but still trust the science, because the science says overall – something that even the scientific studies by the corporate entities that created these things don't even say, right? Okay, but you're being told that don't worry, there's going to be a locally sourced kind of thing. So maybe that would make those that are skeptical ease back a bit regarding, well, I'm a little skeptical of the international corporate conglomerate that creates these things. But since this was made in my country, must be okay, right? I mean, is that seemingly the strategy you think is being rolled out here, or at least tested on the public? Will they accept it from the Australian manufacturer?
Yeah, that's certainly one element of it, Chuck. If we think about who was manufacturing the face masks, who is manufacturing the syringes, where are we getting some of these medical supplies from? Those questions have been asked by Australians. We were getting, initially we were getting on early on because we were getting product from all over the world. We just needed it. We're getting a lot of stuff out of China. And that stuff from China was carrying other things that weren't COVID, but they certainly weren't, they weren't tip-top shape, mate. So we had to quickly abandon utilizing those supply chains and focus, you know, more locally. Having said that, by doing so, yes, the government uses that, the local creation and production of things, and potentially working towards the elixir, as we would call it, to solve all of our problems in regards to this pandemic. Mm-hmm. They sell that and say, well, if we produce it locally, you can be sure to trust it. So that's there, and therefore they have people cheerleading, and they wish to develop more vaccines. And you know, we're not solving homelessness. We're not solving hunger. We're not solving traffic accidents. We're focusing all of our efforts and intentions and resources into something that's meant to be there, that's wiping us all out. But it's not wiping us out anywhere near the numbers where they lead us to believe that we have to shut down the nation.
Well, perhaps this is why the agendas are on a different pace in the Americas here, as opposed to, sorry, but I call Oceania over there. Because, frankly, you know, a general attitude over here might be commonly described as not trusting the government. I mean, you can go to the more extreme like I do, which is the only thing that I reliably expect the government to do is get people killed. And it doesn't matter if it's our people or some other people. That's pretty much their job. as far as solving problems, I don't expect them to do that anyway. but some people in other parts of the world might. And I wonder if that's why it's being played a little differently, one way or another. They have to introduce chaos and fear here in order to get compliance, maybe over a longer time period, to create exhaustion, because Americans might be a little bit more resistant. And it's funny, because during some of the clips you played on the Jeffrey show, and one of the points that came up, which has always occurred to me, is that, you know, frankly, as I've always understood it, the Australians in general sort of were always willing to go shoulder to shoulder with your American cousins. And it's very strange, because they're not the same people culturally, but in general seem to have agreed with the worldview, despite the fact that it's certainly a whole other universe of possibilities that's available to the Australian, and a whole other universe of possibilities that's available to the American through the system, through the culture, et cetera. It's very dissimilar, again, with parallels where, sure, the genesis of what may have grown started with British colonies, but with totally different purposes. You know, this was purely corporate ventures here for the English colonies. And over there, well, a prisoner island, basically. The undesirables, let's send them to Australia. And then, well, sometime later, became a nation. Over here, there's arguments, quite frankly, as to how we did it. But if you accept the mainstream historical norm, a bit of a revolt over taxation without representation and such things caused us to say, yeah, no more. Although that is romanticized, idealized, and there's a lot more deep, dark secrets to it than people might want to accept. And I'm sure that's true in Australia as well. I'm saying the general narrative has always been that even if we were going to go to war with somebody, we could almost always rely on the Australians to at least come along to some degree with us, to be on our side, to be on the people's side, to be on the government's side, almost a more of a reliable ally than anybody else on the planet. That's the way I always saw it. But there is clearly a different attitude toward your government and toward your culture, and it is showing in that. I think there may be, I hate to say this, man, and don't get offended, but there may be a more relaxed sort of attitude toward the authorities over there that is allowing them to, well, you know, push the line, take more advantage of the people and their natural rights in a little faster pace than we might be confronted with here. Am I real far off, number one? And number two, I do want to get to these clips before we run out of time that you have sent me. They're very interesting, and they're not the same ones from the Donald Jeffries show. So, but they may indeed make some of the same points. We'll see. Ben, what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I've got you, Chuck.
Sorry, I put you to sleep for a second. Go ahead.
That's all right, buddy. Yeah, you're right. Let me try to address what you touched upon there about the people and the genetic makeup of the people in Australia and historical subjugation of mm-hmm. people, which was really at the creation of our nation, and people living subjugated for several generations as well, Chuck. There was an officer class that was the officialdom, and they had nice houses, and they were the slave class, mate, and they were white slaves. And they were indigenous slaves as well. But if we think about those people, they were a beaten down people. And as you know, in your nation, you see it every day, mate. There's a lot of animosity and deep hurt and resentment amongst members of the African American community about what happened during slavery. And that wound is still bleeding every day for them. So if we think about it like that, the people of Australia, they were beaten down people. They were brought here against their will. Most of the people that came to Australia 200 years ago, they weren't all murderers and rapists. They weren't all Robin Hood. They weren't all stealing a loaf of bread to feed their mates. But in many cases, they were just somebody that whoever the local official was didn't like in his town. Maybe he was a political opponent.
Well, that's why I used
that guy had the authority. Yeah.
Well, that's why I use the word undesirable to the powers that be, because I'm not saying most people go, well, it was all just criminals. Not necessarily. They were just undesirables to the crown, basically. Would that be accurate?
Yeah, I think Hillary said it best. They were the deplorables.
Okay.
And because they were the deplorables, according to the establishment, those people, I think they carry a little bit of intergenerational trauma. And I think nowadays they can be more easily led into subservience because it's actually part of their genetic trait. It's been beaten down into them. And they don't know any different. It's a false sense of security. Government is daddy. Government takes care of you. Daddy, government is the good guy. And that's leading people to disarray, almost, Chuck. We'll get to the clip in a sec. I'll paint the picture here. Breaking news as of yesterday. In Australia, we have the Australian Football League, which is the equivalent of the NFL, Super Bowl in your country. The Australian Football League has a team, the Adelaide Crows. The Adelaide Crows have just sacked their club director, who was almost like one of the owner's best buddies. Club director, legitimate position. He's been sacked because he was refused a medical exemption against these experimental vaccines. He said he wants to wait and see. He'd prefer to maybe even, like you said, Chuck, wait for something to be produced locally. By the way, it's a big story. He was stood down. The AFL's mandate, the Australian Football League's COVID mandate, is in full effect. The club says it's deeply troubling to think that one of our officials would be so vaccine hesitant. It's contrary to what we're trying to achieve as a nation and as a competition. So I tweeted that gentleman. He saw my tweet. And I said to him, because I had reached out to Nick earlier because there were rumblings about what was happening. And I said, Nick, you're going to be in trouble here, mate. You're setting yourself up. But I tweeted across to him. First, they came for the support staff, but he didn't care because he was a director and not support staff. And then they came for the players and their families and their coaches. But Nick didn't care because he wasn't a player. He wasn't a coach. He wasn't family. And then they came for the cheer squads. And then they came for the junior players, the little Oz kickers, kids that run into the ground at halftime. And he said nothing. And then they came for you, the director. And now there's no one left to stand up for you. Thanks, Nick. And I sent it to him privately, and he won't hear this conversation, so that's why I think I can divulge it. But the point there was, there was somebody that had an option 6 months ago to take a stand for his club, for his organisation. And his club was either going to have to step away and they were going to call the AFL's bluff, the league's bluff, and say, well, we're not playing games, bugger you. Right. But he didn't do that. He allowed, because they had players that didn't want to get it. Those players were told they'd be delisted, they'd be got rid of, so they lose their $1 million contracts. Lots of those players are Indigenous guys. They need to play footy like you guys have. African Americans need to play NBA because it gets their family out of the hood.
Now, that's an interesting correlation because we had NBA players that have been ejected now from their teams. We've had NFL players that have been, well, sanctioned to some degree, but it's not been so severe. Seems like Major League Baseball, because we got the three, four major sports here. Major League Baseball, NHL, I've heard no rumblings from, and Major League Baseball, not so much, not too much resistance. And it's interesting because they had, the bubbles and the various things, and I guess they went through those machinations over there, which, by the way, for American listeners, when he's talking about footy and all this, in case you didn't know, that would be what we call soccer. But it is a major sport there. And indeed, there are people that, yeah, they got those $1 million contracts because for a few years, they're going to bang up their bodies. They're going to end up with concussions. And by the way, soccer players end up with concussions probably just as much as football players do, if not more. So these are people sacrificing their bodies for those contracts. And do they want to go as far as, look, I'll break my bones, I'll bleed for you, but I don't want to take the vaccine. Does anybody have a right to force them to do that is the question over here. And I've literally heard from people that I thought were fairly intellectually sound that You know, like literally one person said, I hope they take this NBA player and throw him in the middle of the ocean to drown because he won't take the vaccine. And I went, oh, my God. You know, like really, this is a legitimate off-air response from somebody who I respected and was shocked to hear this from. But this is a controversy that, again, you know, this is what the star athlete is facing. This is what the star athletic organization is facing. It's definitely the precursor for what occurs in the society too. Don't forget, you know, when people start to stand up and resist things that have a public platform, well, you know, they can be influential and indeed get things to change sometimes because of public outcry. But they're all being shut down. And as you said, look, Mr. Director, while it wasn't affecting you, you had no problem. Okay, everybody else can deal with it. But once it got to you, think about that. And that does speak to elitism in another way, you know. Well, you know, that doesn't apply to me. It's always amazing to me when people can decouple themselves from a situation because it's not affecting their daily life just yet until it does, and then their tune changes. So good point by you, and what can I say? Please continue, though. I'm sorry if I interrupted you.
No dramas, Chuck. Basically, mate, that was a play on words. I was trying to demonstrate to him that this is real history, and we're reliving terrible history. We're reliving World War II-style history. Because that statement, my play on words, was just a ripoff of that famous statement that said something akin to, first they came for the Catholics, but it didn't matter because I wasn't a Catholic. And then they came for the Jews, and it didn't matter because I wasn't a Jew. And they came for the Buddhists, and it didn't matter because I wasn't a Buddhist. And they came for the atheists, and it didn't matter because I wasn't an atheist. Then they came for me. By the time they came for me, there was no one left. Mm-hmm. And so that's how Nazi Germany happened, Chuck. That's how people got put on the trains, mate. Now, they're not going to roll it out the same way now. They don't have to. Back then, they didn't have smartphones, but IBM was putting tattoos on people, and they were keeping cards, and they were tracing and tracking people. So we're having similar things take place here. If you'd like, let's get the ball rolling with the first clip, mate. Have we got a George Carlin clip there we can roll with? And let's try to wrap up this conversation and get to an end point.
Right. Let's do that. And, you know, one last thing, though, is that I found it is shocking that you had a clip on the Donald Jeffries show of a European Union official actually making salient sound points about freedom and what it is the European Union would be willing to do. But then again, is it just lip service, you know, in the American vernacular? Is that what we're looking at there? It's a German official making that statement, and listen to the Donald Jeffries show to hear that. But meanwhile, Ben has brought us some clips, and they are relevant. We're starting off with one featuring George Carlin.
Long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets, and they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. long since bought and paid.
Yeah. So it started to play over there. But that is always the key point with Carlin when he does this stuff. And I know people criticize him, but timeless. How does that not apply today? The man's been dead for many years. It does. So, Ben, where do we go from there?
Yeah, well, George Carlin, he observed it then. That was before the internet, mate. It was before YouTube. You know, it was making sense to a few people back then. So it's only gotten better for itself since then. It's only developed. It's only equipped itself. It's only fortified itself against us better, I guess. He was talking about obedient workers. Now, the reason why it fits is because now they're just the obedient vaccinated. You just change the word and it fits perfectly. There's obedient vaccinated people in Australia here, just like the director of the football club learned. There'll be no resistance, Chuck. Right. And why will there be no resistance? Why can't the players, even if some players stand up and say, no, I'm not doing it, I don't want to, even if he's the superstar player, even if he's the captain of the team, they say, mate, you can't, because we can't let you in the club because all your teammates are vaccinated and their families and kids are here. Mm-hmm. And the unvaccinated, mate, you know, they're endangering people. You don't want to endanger people, do you?
Well,
it's a lot of George Orwell, 1984, doublespeak. It's a lot of, hey, let's get these people, let's guilt shame them into doing things. And it's fraudulent, mate. It's fraudulent.
And the only thing about the Carlin statement there that is not absolutely still timeless, which has kind of become a little outdated, is that he has this idea that they need workers. Through force multipliers, automation, and computerization, guess what? They don't need as many. So now the only thing that remains is what? Compliance. So what is the next clip we have on the list here?
That next clip, if you just get it rolling, I think it'll touch on exactly what you did. And at the end of it, we'll be able to expand on it further.
Fair enough.
Australia has now been described as the world's most secretive democracy. All of us should be suspicious when the government is introducing laws that mean we don't know what's going on.
You need to ask yourself, what are they trying to hide? There's a lot of important things happening in Australia that the government has banned journalists from telling you about. The journalists know a lot of these things are happening, but they can be jailed if they try to tell you. It's a simple but serious question. Why don't they want the people who elect them and pay them to know what they're doing? There has been 75 pieces of legislation introduced since 2001 that have found new ways to stop you learning about what our governments are doing. No other government in the world has done this.
Can you tell us what you've seen today?
Let me give you one example that should make you ask again, what are they trying to hide? Last year, 4,000 people in nursing homes were assaulted. All of us know someone in an aged care home. It may be a mum or a dad or our grandparents. But the government won't tell us who committed these assaults. Was it staff or patients? Why would they keep that a secret? What is there to hide about it? It's serious for all Australians. It's not serious just for media. It's our job to actually serve our communities. And when you see every media organisation line up together to make this point, we need to see some action.
Well, what's fascinating there to me, Ben, is that here is at least one point where Australians are well behind us. I dispute the fact that he says no other government does this, because in the United States, people don't even know, frankly, the average person doesn't even know who their representatives actually are. Unless it's an election year. They pay no attention to what's being done and what's not being done in their names. And it is by design. And even if you do attempt to learn all about it, very difficult to do. It is shadowy at best and secretive at its worst. And the people that are your alleged representatives are not representing you or your interests. We know this already. This almost seems like a surprise to this gentleman in Australia.
Yeah, you're right, Chuck. It was a surprise for him, for the uninitiated. That gentleman is the boss, the bureau chief of News Corp in Australia, of Rupert Murdoch's newspaper empire.
Wow.
He's the boss. And he's now come to the realization, hang on a second, we're not able to report about these adverse effects. We've been shut down. The government will deprive us of our publication abilities if we publish things that they've told us we can't. And not only that, our journalists are not to ask questions about those things. He's come to the realization, Chuck, he was a normie. Now, his hands are tied and he'll play by the rules, so he just swallows it and accepts it. He stands up and makes a video like that and says, look, there's something terrible here. We need to do something about it. All the while being part of that machine for the last decade, he has been complicit in the subversion of stories. Yes, we do know that. But thank goodness he's now seeing the light. There's one more clip, mate. It should be the Jordan Peterson and Joe Rogan clip. If we get that one going, and then I'll touch on that, and that's going to wrap up what you were asking in regards to who are the manufacturers here in Australia and what ages are these manufacturers offering their vaccines to.
Fair enough. So we'll get to that now.
How it gets to the point where
things get to terrible places one tiny step at a time. You know, if I encroach on you and I'm sophisticated about it, I'm going to encroach 2 millimeters. I'm going to encroach right to the point where you start to protest, and I'm going to stop. Then I'm going to wait. Then you're going to calm down. Then I'm going to encroach again right to the point where you protest. Then I'm going to stop. Then I'm going to wait. And I'm just going to do that forever. And before you know it, you're going to be back 3 miles from where you started, and you'll have done it one step at a time. And then you'll go, oh, how'd I get here? And the answer was, well, I pushed you a little farther than you should have gone, and you agreed. And so then I pushed you a little farther than you should have gone again, and you agreed. And if anybody's interested in this sort of process, and this is a horrifying book, if you want to read about how this process works, you can read a book called Ordinary Men by Robert Browning.
I just don't understand how it gets to the point
things get to terrible places one tiny step at a time.
Okay, Chuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, mate. Sorry about the bloody volume of that one, but in reality, Jordan Peterson is breaking it down. He's saying this is a totalitarian tiptoe. A mask was meant to solve it. Social distancing was meant to solve it. A vaccine was meant to solve it. 2 vaccines were meant to solve it. 2 masks were meant to be better than 1. A booster shot's meant to solve it. Complying is meant to solve it. Checking in, signing up, following the procedure is meant to solve it. None of it's solving anything. Children in Australia, the headline is for the Herald Sun, Melbourne's biggest newspaper, the headline, jabs on the way for kids as young as 2. Exclusive. Children as young as 2 could soon be receiving Moderna jab, with the US manufacturer revealing its plans to make the vaccine in Australia. Touching on your point, Chuck, we won't take it for 2-year-olds if it's made from overseas, but they can bring their operation here, say it's made locally, and we'll give it to your 2-year-olds. Continuing. Moderna is due to release the clinical studies on the immunisation of children under 12 in November. So they've already done that. They just haven't put it in the paper yet. And they're just seeking government approval to follow up. They've already had approval for 12 to 15-year-olds. Moderna confirmed it is in discussions with the Australian government to manufacture the messenger RNA vaccine, which delivers the viral protein, and quote, we are certainly very eager to kind of get that collaboration with the Victorian government going, Moderna's chief medical officer, Dr. Paul Burton, said. So, like, Chuck, man, they're coming for 2-year-olds, and it's on the front page of the paper, and they're saying it's a great thing, and we're going to make the vaccine your hometown, so you can trust it.
Well, they're trying to do that here now, where they've gotten down to the 5-year-olds, and now they're saying they're going to go lower, of course. But don't worry, it's just like all those other vaccines that we give the kids. Don't you trust those? It gives me a headache. I mean, look, how many ways can you boil a frog? Well, pretty much the best way, if you want to boil a live frog, is to turn up the heat slowly. And it's like watching, a multi-burner stove boiling many, many frogs here, because they're just turning up the heat slowly on all of this stuff. And it's just according to the tolerance. Just make sure the frogs don't leap out while we're turning up the heat. I mean, that's the way I see it. Maybe I never thought I'd have something really in common with Jordan Peterson, but apparently I do. Yeesh.
Chuck, you're right, mate. I'm not usually one. I don't really care about who said it. I care about what's said. Mm-hmm. And so I can take a page out of anyone's book because everyone's got something to share, mate, and we can find the good in all of us. But having said that, mate, the Therapeutic Goods Administration here in Australia, the TGA, which is, I guess, is the same as your FDA, they've just approved Moderna's COVID-19 booster shot for all Australians 18 and over. So Moderna has just been said, yep, two-year-olds, that's cool, we'll make that for you, but we're good to go for everyone 18 and over. The strange thing about it to me, though, is, Chuck, the name of this new booster shot from Moderna,
yeah,
being marketed to Australia as Spikevax. It's the Spikevax. Just go and get your Spikevax. Mate, they're trying to make catchphrases out of these things. Like, to me, that's so nefarious. That's so dastardly. That's so demonic to call it such a thing. But they'll say, no, it's perfectly innocent. It's the Spikevax. You just need a little spike. You just need a top up. You just need a booster. See where that's playing out to, Chuck? Am I wrong to think that that's leading somewhere maybe we don't want to go, mate?
Well, you know what's funny is, I'm predicting that I'm going to get banned, hit, all kinds of things for today's show. Here we go anyway. You know, I got hit early on for saying that eventually they're going to have you taking a whole bunch of different shots if you follow their messaging here in the U.S. And why? Because it's impossible to pin down this thing based on scientific convention that I understand. This is not possible to do this, even given if you accept their science, which I take with, you know, many grains of salt already. But if you accept that, why have they said they could not make a vaccine for the common cold? Because it keeps changing the variants. There's no way to design a vaccine that handles it according to what science has always said. My whole life I heard this. Why is there no cold vaccine? Right? And what is responsible, for half of what we think of as common colds? Well, according to our own governmental agencies, a coronavirus of sorts. Now, it's not the novel coronavirus. It's not Omicron, Delta, Indian variant. It's not. But it is akin to it. So if they can't deal with half of what causes common cold symptoms with a vaccine, how is it they've dealt with this? Well, they're going to continuously ask you to keep getting shots. I got taken down for that. That statement alone, that's going to be what's coming. And lo and behold, here we are, where, you know, mix and match them. Go get a Johnson & Johnson after you've gotten your two Pfizers. After you've gotten your two Modernas, go get a Pfizer. Literally, I'm hearing this stuff in mainstream news. And I decided to do a time check on ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, and Fox all at the same time, right? Exactly the same time in the morning when people are getting up early. Okay, like 6 a.m. my time. You know what they were all doing simultaneously? Reading off of virtually the same script regarding this. And that's something that one of your guys mentioned here in the clips. When you see the entire media pushing the same message, this is a problem. Now, he was talking about secrecy, but this is broad daylight. This is when they're all pushing the same agenda, when nobody is resisting the war to come. That means that the powers that be have decided that this is the way it's going to be, regardless of what your will is or what your representatives, alleged representatives, say about it. This is what it is. And that, to me, doesn't sound like the will of the people is represented by the, government that's, you know, here at least, supposed to be of, for, and by the people. Problematic. Ben, you got one more clip here, though.
Yeah, I do. Just 30 seconds before we roll to that clip. So we're at a point in time now where public officials, politicians have gravitated towards a belief system where they think they are God. And they will impose things on people. Dan Andrews in Victoria, two shots plus three boosters is what he's saying. 6 shots a year for the fully vaccinated, and let's continue on, Victorians, because we never know what's coming next, but we've got to be ready to respond, so make sure you signed up and be a good little guy and come on in and get your shot. So who knows where it ends? We never know. If you call Dan Andrews into question for that, Dan Andrews says any condemnation of his political actions is an attack on himself and his family, and it's a threat to the safety of his family and children. Because people, well, why would they be hesitant? They're crazy, far-right anti-vaxxers. The message has been made, and the story's been written, and the newspapers write the script for it every day. So this last clip is really where we're heading to with this, and what are the aspirations of the people behind this from a global standpoint? Where is the world transforming to, and what are they hoping to get out of all of this? So if you'd like to go ahead and play that, Chuck, that'd be great.
January of this year. They had their annual meeting, the kickoff meeting, and they had a bunch of French thinkers come up and address them about what's happening in the economy, what's happening in the future. A guy stood up, one of the top biotech investors in France, and said the first full Homo sapien has been born today, and they will be something that is post-man, okay, because of either a chip, artificial intelligence is implanted, who knows. My point is, if you look at it, you've got all these industries going down this path totally unregulated. With nobody looking, you got DARPA, your tax dollars, you got private equity, you got stuff happening in China, South Korea, in Eastern Europe. Nobody knows what's going on, right? But you're seeing hints of it. You're hearing hints of it from the Schmitz of the world and from people talking about national security, saying, well, you know, there's some artificial intelligence weapons that could be, you know, very scary. You got the people are sitting there going, you got the guy came out the other day on the Defense Department saying we're so far behind where the Chinese are. Okay, then you don't even talk about the CRISPR part, which could get to the biological weapons. We have no earthly idea what's going on. We have no ability to control it right now because, look, I'm a fighter and I fought globalization, and I will take on a lot of fights. This one right here, you kind of sit there and go, where do we even start?
Yeah. Why would the elites want the plebs to be in their Neuralink network?
They don't. Here's what it was Jane Goodall said the other day. Right? The math doesn't work to solve anything on the climate change crisis at the scale you have of people today, of 7 billion people, okay? Her thing was, hey, the carrying capacity of the Earth that's correct is 500 million. What the elites want is 500 million, right? And so when they say the replacement strategy, it's not about whites versus Hispanics versus blacks. It's about Homo sapiens versus the elites want, and all of them focus on this one thing, which is life extension, right? The Veritas guys, when they were in the Facebook, you know, he's talking up the young girl and being a big shot and talking about how they worked the election against Trump. The last part of it's the buried lead. He goes, oh, by the way, all Zuckerberg and the whites spend their time on is eternal life and Meta versus, he's the one that dropped the bomb on Meta. That they're going to a whole different thing of the embodied internet, and that's where they spend their time. And you make a big deal about this election, they don't spend any time on that. They really spend their time on this. The elites in the world are spending their time now financing and looking at extending life because all of them are godless. They're all atheistic materialists. They want to live forever. Okay? They're in back of this whole thing. And this is not conspiracy theory. Look at Facebook and Meta.
And they have enough power and influence and money to do so. And it's not just foreign countries. It's Amazon. It's Google developing artificial intelligence. It's also working with China in order to do
Zuckerberg, Google, these are like, we're back in the Middle Ages where you have city-states. Yeah. Amazon and Google.
Well, you know, there you have it. Again, a bit of a chipmunk-sounding voice there, a little bit sped up, but that's Steve Bannon talking about the transhumanist agenda. And I'll suggest a book right here in case you don't have a copy of it. It's Revolve, Man's Scientific Rise to Godhood, which is written by a host on the Ocelli Network, Aaron Franz. Also his documentary by the same name. To get an introduction, if you don't know what the transhumanist agenda is, and at the end of the day, all of this dovetails perfectly with those things that they said were just the kooky conspiracy theories, the wide-eyed craziness of people that were paranoid, the Luddites who were wanting to play with the internet but afraid of technology. I'm sorry. I see that if people want to use technology to play God, no matter what you think God is, that is their agenda, not necessarily yours as you would understand it. It is dangerous. And, you know, what happens in each one of these, dystopic reality timelines that is presented, whether it is the Terminator universe or, God help us all, Idiocracy, eventually you come to a point where if the machines are in control, mankind's not going to do so well. And there are people literally actively working toward it, the people that have the resources and the access to the technology that you and I have yet to even see. Although we are aware of things like Sophia, which is now a citizen of Saudi Arabia, I think. The corporations that create these things, they're people. Believe me, it all fits together. And indeed, there are people out there who believe that this is actually the thing that we should be discussing. None of these other things. Forget about the politics. Forget about the social issues. Forget about it all. This is really the threat to mankind that we're going to be blindsided by in the very near future. And there are some that even say it's already too late. Ben, is this ultimately the conclusion to the presentation that you're making here today regarding this?
Well, I think so. It's not a hopeless situation. It's a situation we can see for what it is. So that gives us an advantage over those who can't see it for what it is. So having said that, automation is a real thing, Chuck. We've had one of Australia's – well, he's a billionaire. He's a he's an experienced innovator. He's in his 70s. His name is Dick Smith. He makes all types of things. He even makes bloody peanut butter, mate, that type of stuff. And he makes tomato sauces. He makes TVs. He does manufacturing. He's done a lot of things. And he's been talking about automation, and he understands it from a big-time manufacturing standpoint. And he distributes nationally and has done so for multiple decades, so he understands supply chain and pipeline stuff. And he's saying that by 2030, he knows that there'll be a 50% reduction in the present workforce. And he's not talking about just in his companies. He's talking about across the board. Because once the AI, once something happens, once a little bit more software gets developed over the next couple of years, and it will, and then it's going to develop again a couple of years after that, twice as good as it was before, the rules are about to be rewritten. And you mentioned earlier they're talking about human resources. Well, you don't need the people, like you said, Chuck. They're being phased out. What are we going to do with all of these people? Who knows how they're going to get rid of 2 billion people that won't be required anymore? Maybe they're doing something about that now. Who knows?
Well, as I've observed in the corporate universe, temporarily I did work for ExxonMobil, and I was in the human resources business, okay? I was being taught by the people that wanted to export the grand plans. For big oil and their whole thing on the consumer level and literally on the management level was all about efficiency and reducing the amount of necessary workers. And they literally gave us practices, good practices. They rewarded us for doing it. It is the reason why I could not in good conscience continue to do it, even though it was one of the best paying jobs I had. I was able to take care of my family, but I thought about the future. And even though I couldn't stop it, I also could not in good conscience participate in it. That's the truth of why it is I stopped working there. And I had stock plans for my kids and all that stuff. I couldn't participate in this, and I see it exactly as eventually there's going to be no need for, the old trope, go flip burgers, you'll earn some money that way. I mean, yeah, it'll be less than half of what they should pay somebody to sustain life easily, but you can go get a job if you're willing to work. That's not the case. One, two, you're not paid for your energies. Three, frankly, you're not going to be necessary. There won't be a need to flip burgers or even do, your participation in the gig economy with driving a car, delivering food that people order online, which doesn't require people either, automated delivery, automated movement of product and commodity, automated everything. you're no longer necessary. And in fact, not all the automation will be necessary, because what happens to people who have no resources delivered to them if they don't know how to acquire them on their own? Ask many on the continent of Africa how that works out. Until your Chinese saviors, so to speak, come in and pseudo-colonize your place for some natural resources, then you learn what it's like to get back on the supply chain, disrupted or not. Anyway, Ben, I'm sorry. That's the way I see the world, but I've taken up a lot of time here, and I want to give you a couple of minutes. I'll cut this thing down, or maybe I'll just leave it extended, because this is a key point, and I want to give you the opportunity to wrap everything up as you see fit. Jay Dyer was on in the first hour, and that is a relevant discussion to all of what we're discussing tonight. Although Ben might be more focused on what it is he can see from his local vantage point, and I may be more focused on what I'm observing here, for the most part, in the United States. Truth is, this is a human problem, not a problem belonging to singular nation states or groups of individuals that are decidedly divided by alleged race and everything else. This is a problem of, guess what, all of us who are not part of the moneyed or privileged class or their current servants. Because even those middle managers who are gaining what appears to be wealth and fortunes through their activities that support all of this, they will also, guess what, experience the same thing Ben was talking about. You know, eventually it's okay to kill a few million people in the third world. Maybe it's okay to kill people in the first world. Maybe it's okay to kill your neighbors. But eventually they're going to come to you too, because you're not going to be necessary to middle manage anything. Okay? Keep that in mind. Ben, I'd like you to wrap this all up your own way.
Okay, cool. Thanks, Chuck. Let me think about this one second. Okay, the dystopia that we're seeing, it was always meant to be scientific. Whenever we read about the dystopia or things portrayed what the dystopia, the futuristic society looked like, was always some type of scientific dictatorship. The only difference is now science has become the ultimate religion. And the pope of that religion currently is Dr. Fauci. And Dr. Fauci has made statements in the last week or so that say if anyone says anything against Dr. Fauci, they're not saying anything against Dr. Fauci. They're saying things against the science, the religion. So I think the dystopia had to have this happen. COVID is the perfect vehicle for them to build the dystopia off. Whether or not it was just coincidental, we can never let a crisis go to waste. I think Rahm Emanuel said that. It wouldn't really matter if you're in Tulsa, Oklahoma, I think it is, Tulsa, Oklahoma, or you could be in Mozambique, you could be in Australia, you could be in the Ukraine. Very shortly, in the next few years of our lives, if we wish to go anywhere around this world as freely as what we once did previously, we're kidding ourselves, because that world ain't going to be there anymore. Something new is happening, and it's a very strange occurrence when I'm looking at a press conference and I see Joe Biden sitting there with Putin, and ordinarily it'd be pretty funny. And at this time, I think, would the world be worse off if Putin had have hit it 2 years ago with the weapon of indignation, that EMP? Because the effects of COVID in this region of the world, and I know in other countries, and for millions and millions of people, have been utterly disastrous, Chuck. And the people that are responsible for that are our leaders in government and the bureaucrats that are steering them. So I just want to impress upon people that we're all in this together. We'll be fine, mate, because we're living our lives. We're doing our thing. We wake up every day and we do what needs to get done. The system will continue to roll out as it does, and we'll do our best to speak out against that. But at the end of the day, mate, we'll keep our fingers crossed. So God bless you and all the best. Thanks for the opportunity.
Well, yes. And look, I appreciate you taking the time to not only do Donald Jeffrey's show today, but to also do mine, because these are important perspectives that need to be heard. I want to offer you one last thought, though, because I find it really ugly that we are at a point where science is, in essence, being turned into a religion. And indeed, if someone were to take a dispassionate view of science, scientific examinations of real world problems, and actually apply them dispassionately, here's the reality. You know, people talk about how it's unsustainable, the amount of people that are on the planet. If a scientific distribution of the necessary resources to sustain life were done dispassionately, regardless of the consent of the nation states, et cetera, if that were done on the planet, there would be no one hungry still. If somebody actually applied real medicine to a lot of the ills, whether they be psychological or they be physical, or maybe in some cases you do become what you eat and you've been eating garbage, so you wind up thinking like garbage too. You know, garbage in, garbage out. Very simple scientific principle. You know, if it was dispassionately applied and it wasn't about a religion and swearing to the validity of somebody's version of science as opposed to real scientific, empirical evidence, okay, it might not be like this. You could probably make sure that people weren't as sick as they used to be. You could naturally extend life as opposed to seeking to integrate with machines. You could probably do a lot of things other than what's being done today. Science in and of itself is not the problem. It is the powers that should not be that are utilizing it. Just like religion to me is not a problem. It is the way it is being utilized. It is just like politics, not a problem. We can disagree about ways to solve issues. But when we're turned against one another, most vociferously, most vehemently, most venomously, it is useful to those that wish to remain in power to have us disabled by that which should not have a negative impact upon us. And that's what it is. It is the use of these things. It is the use of slave speak and the linguistic, you know, the neuro-linguistic programming, the Bernaysian style propaganda. It is the use of these things and the motives of those that have control at the moment of much of it that is the problem. We could accomplish so much collectively if we chose to do that. And, you know, on a hopeful note, I would say that at any moment, collectively, we could decide to reject a great many of these control grids, mechanisms, systems, and embrace things that would, well, cause the evolution of society as opposed to the fracturing and the need to participate in the divide and conquer paradigm that is seemingly eternal and is seemingly the best worn strategy of those that cloak themselves in the right to rule over others. What are your thoughts there, Ben? And I'll close out the show with whatever it is you choose to say about what I just said.
Okay, thanks, Chuck. Interesting comments, mate. I love science, Chuck. We all love science. I trust the science. We all trust science. We've all gone to the doctor when we've put a nail through our thumb. We've all had stitches. We've all broken a bone. We've all taken some medicine for a sore throat. We've had no dramas, mate. I've been operated on a few times in my life. They put me to sleep. They loaded me up with all types of science. The science took care of me, mate. The science looked after my body. The science did everything. That was them. But this is a new type of science, Chuck. And this religion, this new type of science, that's a particular denomination of science that is totally alien to the real science that I once knew, to the real medicine that I once knew, to the totally transparent, tried, true, and trusted medicine and science that we once knew. So I believe that we're correct to be somewhat skeptical of something that's being pushed with so much energy, with so much fanfare. They don't pump up the Olympics this much, Chuck. They don't pump up solving world hunger or anything like this. They don't pump up stopping the Iraq or Afghanistan war, anything like this. They don't pump up let's find out where bin Laden truly was for those 10 years on the media about things like this. So why is the science being annexed on to this agenda? And why is this particular method of people dying being determined to be the only thing that we can focus on going forward? Even though hundreds of other things kill people in thousands of more ways every single day, the science isn't proving itself correct. When it does, we'll be on board with the science, because science will be what it was meant to be, Chuck. All the best, mate.
There you have it. And again, a big thanks to Australian Ben. And you know what? You want to give out your Twitter handle just so people could, if they choose to engage with you somewhere else, ask you a question, or, you know, look, if they want to hear you expound upon something and you want to have a platform, mine is open to you. You know, if there's a need, an alert, piece of news that you think needs to get out there that maybe somebody else is not hearing, I certainly want to welcome you to bring it to me so we can participate together in distributing that information, breaking news, whatever. But what is your current Twitter handle?
Yeah, thanks, Chuck. My current Twitter handle is @AustralianTalk, @AustralianTalk, TALK. That's pretty much, if people want to sort of look what I do or a little bit of things that I'm interested in, that's where it's at. Really, it's just my observations of what I see taking on around the world, and I pretty much just try to make it a melting pot of all ideas. I have far right, like crazy leftists or whatever you want to call them. I've got everyone on there, mate. So my follow count at the moment is tiny. A couple of my other Twitters where I had, you know, a nice following going, I was building something, mate, along my YouTube channel, that was all wiped off. But I'm not in it for the glory. I'm not in it for fame at all, mate. I'm quite happy to be a private person. I guess one exclusive or one interesting story that people might see on my Twitter, I just recently posted. Chuck, we're moving into the future, mate. We know about real dolls, and we know about men that are single, men that want to utilize artificial dolls as their girlfriends, as their living girlfriends. And we know you can buy them off the shelf right now in Los Angeles for a couple of companies and about $5,000 a pop. Well, they've been hooked up with some robotics now, and the first lesbian sex robots will be coming onto the market very soon. They're going to be programmed to be gay, so I'm guessing there'll be a huge hit with straight men around the world. So just some of the silly stuff that I post on there. But ultimately, mate, like I said, it's just an observation of what's going on and where we're heading along this path.
Well, on a serious note, that may be part of the transhumanist agenda more than you realize, too, Ben. Although it does sound like a salacious and crazy thing to report on, it is worthy of note. Anyway, I want to thank Jay Dyer for being on the first hour. Australian Ben, again, follow him on Twitter and do all that. I'll give you the notes here with the show, whether it's Real Dolls or his call into another podcaster's show not too long ago. You know, you could catch that stuff on Twitter, and I appreciate it. And hopefully he'll post this show when I put it out tomorrow on my feed. Anyway, thanks, Ben. Thanks to all of you for listening. And absolutely, at all times, remember, I am merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.